English muffin, no bagel. He let his guard down. But God bless him. That's Mike Evans. That's why we love him, Lee. Besides the fact he's a hell of a player, he speaks his mind. And I think he was speaking for Godwin, too. The offensive line, the tight end room, Rashad White. No eggs, no nothing. That turns into two drinks at the bar. That affects your appetite. Now you just drop $45 before you even started.
Buccaneers fans, the Ira Kaufman podcast is on, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. We got plenty to talk about, Ira, plenty to talk about, things I haven't even told you yet. But first, you got to go to BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan, he will meet or beat any deal you have from another Ford dealership, if you did such a terrible thing and actually went to one, but he will meet or beat it, or he'll give you $500 cash. Sean Sullivan, he's all fired up, Ira. You know, the latest best-in-class podcast is up from Sean Sullivan, presented by Bill Curry Ford. He broke down the mistakes, the moves and non-moves of the Buccaneers drafts through the 1970s and the 1980s, Ira. How about that?
He wasn't even born when the Bucs started in 76. I don't think he was. Boy, it's nice to see a guy who really delves into history. Although, Lee, I think we have to admit up front, Buck history overall, not very good. Not very good from 76 on.
McKay panicked and traded for the throwing Samoan Jack Thompson, traded away a first-round pick because of another dumb move. Culverhouse wouldn't bring Doug Williams back. And just colossal dumb mistake. Colossal dumb mistake. And I know, Sean, if you mention Earl Campbell to him, he goes bananas. Because the Bucks traded for Jimmy Giles, but that pick they traded away was Earl Campbell.
And Steve Buck culminated in 86 with the Bo Jackson pick, who said, "Don't draft me. I'm not going to play for you." They didn't listen. Sure enough, he never played one down for the Bucks for a while. He was one electrifying running back in the NFL.
Sage, the podcast is there for anybody. Sean sprints through all those years in not even 20 minutes. Some really interesting anecdotes. Just wanted to bring it up. So because it moves so quickly, it's a great history lesson. It's like one of these 15-minute tutorials. Very passionate, very interesting. You can find it at JoeBucksFan.com. At BillCurryFord.com, you are going to see that they will hand you $500 just for ordering, custom ordering a vehicle through their concierge service online, which is so easy. They've got all sorts of great specials. BillCurryFord.com, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Florida's Elite Restoration, Ira, that is who you call when you have a disaster at your property, at your business. You call them immediately. That means 24/7. They'll get out to your property. They'll evaluate it free. And they'll tell you how you need to move forward, and they'll work with your insurance company if you sign on with them to let them handle restoring your property. They will battle for your money, because it's going to be a battle when it comes to working with insurance companies and getting what you are owed to fix your property. Mention the Sage or JoeBucksFan.com when you first call. And if you use Florida's Elite Restoration, they'll give you $500 back. Just like Sean Sullivan, they'll give you $500 just for working with them. And maybe that's money for your deductible, or maybe that's just cash back. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Sage, opening day against the Minnesota Vikings, you will be at Big Storm Clearwater. Big Storm Clearwater. Looking forward to hanging out with you there. We're inviting Bucks fans to join us at 11:45 a.m., Ira. There'll be a special menu, a couple of cool specials that are going to be sort of like a discount price fix thing, like a burger and a beer, or a hot Nashville hot chicken sandwich, and any draft. Really some cool stuff that'll probably run up until kickoff to encourage you to come out early, grab lunch, and dial in. Great Wi-Fi, great TVs. And just a great atmosphere indoors and outside, which is the really cool part, on their covered patio, 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road, Big Storm Brewery Tap Room. But you don't have to wait. You can go there all the time. Follow them on social media, Big Storm Ybor City, Centro Ybor, great live music and cool things. Big Storm Odessa off State Road 54, Success Drive in Orlando at the Amway Center. Open even if you're not going to a concert. Hang out at the Amway Center, Big Storm, and in Cape Coral. More on that as we move forward, Sage. Preseason week two is here. Kyle Trask gets the start, Ira, on Saturday night. Baker Mayfield is supposed to play as well. Bucks aren't really supposed to do anything different than they did in week one. Some interesting practices this week, Ira, but how are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. You just made my day, Steve, because you said two of the sweetest words in the English language. Expanded menu. Expanded menu. It's a beautiful thing, Steve. When I get up that morning of September 10th on Sunday, all I'm going to have is a cup of coffee, Steve. Not even going to have a piece of bread, no English muffin, no bagel, no eggs, no nothing. And I'm not going to spoil my appetite because I'm getting there. Big storm, Clearwater. And you said 11:45. I might even be there a little early. And I got to check out what's on tap for this menu. I'm going to find a seat right in front of one of those big, beautiful, big screen televisions. And I'm looking forward to meeting all our Buck friends out there for another season of Buck football. The Bucks are lead a pretty heavy underdogs going to Minneapolis. We understand that. Vikings won a lot of games last year, Lee. I don't think they're as good as their record. I just don't. They won all the close games. You don't do that 2 years in a row. All the three-point games the Vikings won. And, you know, they got a pretty good quarterback, and they got a great receiver. But I don't see talent spread up and down that roster. I think the Bucks are a lively underdog. As long as they don't suffer any more injuries in the next two preseason games, do I expect Kalijah Kansi back from Minnesota? Probably not. I think they're going to be cautious, and I think they should be. Do I expect Ryan Jensen? No, I do not, Lee. No, I do not. And that's going to be a problem all year long because, Lee, you've been hitting it hard. What is the future for Ryan Jensen? It's very, very uncertain. But I'm looking forward to the game against the Jets. And then I think it's time for Bowles to announce his starting quarterback.
No, you know, Ira was bringing up hopefully no more injuries. There's really only been one injury, and that's Kansi. Now, of course, people are screaming, what about Russell Gage? I hate to sound crude, but what about him? Did anybody really bank on the guy? Really? I didn't. And, I hate to hear what happened to the guy, and he's such a good dude. And you know, he was telling me in training camp that he'd never recovered from his hamstring the previous OTAs. When I say previous, I mean last year. And I honestly didn't bank on him at all. How could you? And sure enough, he gets hurt. It wasn't an hamstring, and sounds like a terrible injury. And the thing that, I don't know, freaked out is the right term, but what really, really surprised me was practice wasn't even over yet. It was maybe an hour after Gage's injury, maybe less than an hour. Ian Rappaport's already reporting he's done for the year. Wow, that had to be a really, really gruesome injury to come to that conclusion that quickly. Like, not even take any tests, no MRIs, no x-rays, just boom, he's done. And I, like, holy cow. I don't recall off the top of my head the last time the Bucks had an injury where less than an hour after it occurred in a practice, he's done for the year. You didn't even hear that about Ryan Jensen, but you did with Gage.
Steve, I think Lee is underselling Gage a little bit because, Steve, the fact is he's a veteran with a proven track record. Now, look, he's not great, but as a third receiver, you could do a lot worse. Steve, he caught 5 touchdowns last year, finished the season fairly strong. But I will say this, how as unfortunate as it is, Steve, you were there when it happened, it's an opportunity for guys like Trey Palmer, who might be the standout of Buck Camp 2023. He keeps making plays. He's got that element of speed, which they need. There's a chance for Tompkins to do some more things. But I can see Palmer sliding into that role. But, Steve, he hasn't done it on an NFL level. So that's the concern. You've got unproven depth now that has to move into Gage's spot. But everything I see about Palmer, Steve, you've seen him more than I have out in Jersey. The guy's impressive. He makes plays.
Yeah, a couple of things. I do think Lee's underselling Gage from this standpoint only is that, you know, a lot of people think Gage had a crappy year last year, didn't do anything, but he still had 50 catches and 5 touchdowns. So that means to replace him, the next guy, even if he overachieves, right, if Palmer as a rookie has 50 catches and 5 touchdowns, we're going to say, man, this guy's on the rise. This is a good, we got a good pick here. So It's all kind of relative. They don't have anyone with the track record to replace Gage except one man who continues to be overlooked, not by me, but continues to be overlooked, and that's David Moore. In 2020, he had 5 touchdowns for the Seahawks, caught 35 balls. He's a much better yards per catch guy than Gage ever was in his career. And guess who led the Bucs in receiving in the first preseason game? Most yards. No one talks about it, but it was David Moore. And so, you know, he's got the comfort level with the offense. He's probably only here because Dave Canales said, I trust this guy and I like this guy. And he's also got the size. He plays kind of big and he's a veteran. So, you know, they're going to hope, there's that word again, they're going to hope that he's back to form. You know, so far, I think he's obviously stayed healthy in camp and they like him. But Palmer is exciting against the Jets. Caught a really cool back shoulder throw from Mayfield, a real timing thing that was real sharp, like 22 yards or so. And, of course, he had the big bomb that everybody's seen part of it on Buccaneers.com from Kyle Trask, about 50 yards, beat Sauce Gardner. I think the only man who didn't allow a touchdown last year. It was only to the 5-yard line or so when he laid out for the catch, but that was a big, big play. And kudos to Kyle Trask on that play. He actually changed the play at the line of scrimmage and went for the deep shot against Gardner, and they hit it. So exciting rookie. As you said, Ira, I think he is probably, through this date, the story of the Bucs preseason right now.
One thing I'm going to be watching, Steve, I said last week I was going to be looking at the running game because God knows they need improvement there, huge improvement there. And I didn't see it. Lee didn't see it either. We were sitting next to each other. We looked at each other midway through the second quarter. And, you know, Pittsburgh was missing quite a few defensive starters, too. And we said, boy, they still can't run the ball. This week, maybe I'm going to look at pass protection a little more, Lee, because, boy, the Jets really get after it. Salah knows what he's doing on that side of the ball. They got talent up and down that defense, all 3 levels. You can only hope that, you know, Mayfield and Trask emerge unscathed from this game. Don't hold the ball too long, gentlemen, because the Jets are coming after you.
You know, Bulls wants to run the ball. They can't run. They're SOL, man.
I still don't think it's crazy to think they're going to pick up another running back, Steve. I don't think that's nuts.
I don't think anything's nuts, Ira. I mean, you know how Light and his team are scouring the wire. I mean, it could be a running back. It could be a receiver now that Gage goes down. It wouldn't surprise me at all. You still got Jarvis Landry hanging out there. I believe he's a 5-time Pro Bowler who played with Baker Mayfield. And I don't know what Mayfield thinks of Landry, but at this point in the season, I think Landry would come quite cheap, and he's at least as good as Russell Gage, in my opinion. So I don't know what they're going to do, and there's certainly Jason Light has picked up right tackles before on the waiver wire, and if Gedeky, you know, they like him, but if he doesn't get more consistent, they may find a body.
When the teams make those last cuts, Lee, there's going to be some attractive names. There's going to be some surprises, maybe for salary purposes or whatever. Guys that you thought were surefire to make the roster, they're going to get cut. I think Jason Light's going to look at it very carefully at certain positions. I still feel they're a little short, whether it's depth or maybe even a guy that can play a prominent role.
Well, there's always going to be a glut on countdown or cut down day, always going to be a glut, because all of a sudden you're going to have what, 800,000 players looking for work.
Yep.
Sage, one thing about the running game, I will be looking at that with you, because I think what gets lost sometimes is the running game is really about consistency. You know, a lot of teams talk about no negative runs and you know, yeah, you get your 3 yards, and you pop one once in a while, and that's your running game. But you got to get those 3 yards. You can't be doing what the Bucs do way too often, and then they get an 8-yard run, and fans are like, yeah, look at that guy. You know, he's got something there. No, it's about the running game consistency, because they're probably screwed, like Lee said, is if it's not there. And, you know, a couple of good series running the ball and going 21 for 78 on the ground isn't going to cut it.
You got to be rewarded. I'll say this. I'm not going to make an excuse for Leftwich, because he did a poor job last year. But Lee, when he tried to run, and he did, he didn't get anything for it. And Lee, when you keep pounding your head against the wall and you're getting 2 yards And the next thing you know, it's 3rd and 7. It's difficult to stick with that run game, Lee, no matter what the score is, if you're not getting rewarded at all.
You know, that's an argument I've made for years. To me, it makes no sense if you can't run the ball or flip the coin. If you can't pass the ball, then why keep doing it? Make it worthwhile. If something's working, keep going in that well. If something's not working, quit doing it. You know, Bowles, this offseason, it seems like he's turning into Lovie Smith. I mean, he's just absolutely obsessed with takeaways. And I've always been on the mind, takeaways are a game of chance. Whereas if you play good defense, you will get a turnover. It's called a punt. In other words, turning the ball over on downs. That's a turnover, a punt. Just play good, sound, fundamental defense. It'll take care of itself. You know, I know people give me stats. Well, you get this pick, you get that pick. Yeah, Greg Schiano had the Bucs with the second most takeaways in the freaking league, and they had a losing record. So stop, spare me. You know, just play good defense. Well, Manny Diaz, defensive coordinator of Penn State, was on a podcast. I know where this is college and where this, you know, this is an NFL podcast. He's a college defensive coordinator. But he was asked, how can you prepare and practice for takeaways when you can't hit people and you can't breathe on a quarterback? And he said his analytics suggest that most takeaways happen on 3rd and long. So what he tries to do is, good defense on 1st down, good defense on 2nd down, get the other team in the 3rd and long, and at that point, they go after the takeaways. And Penn State was number 7 in the nation last year in takeaways. Just about half the takeaways the Bucs had last year were 3rd and long or 4th and long. So there might be a correlation there. I don't know. You know, I don't have enough data. You know, small sample sizes, the stat geeks like to say.
Steve, here's a subtle factor that I was just thinking when Lee was talking about the 3rd and long situations last season, and we documented this. These are facts. How often were the Bucs up 14-3 last year at the half or midway through the 3rd quarter? It just didn't happen. Maybe past the first 2 weeks. It just didn't happen. They couldn't score, Steve, especially in the first half. Couldn't score. And most of the time, you know, they were losing 10-3 at the half. Steve, that doesn't help a defense in terms of takeaways, because the other team, they still can have balance if they want it. You know, some teams, they abandon the run if they're down 14-3. These coaches, not all of them have the patience. I don't think the Bucs defense was able to benefit from that kind of situation because, Steve, the offense was so damn bad, especially in the first half, where I don't think the Bucs defense could dictate what the heck was going on, and they couldn't sit on the pass because the other team was either winning or the score was tied. The Bucs just, they didn't have enough leads last year, Steve, and leads really help lead the takeaways, I think.
Yeah, they weren't in enough of those high takeaway situations, and even that could be just a point in the game, pressure on a quarterback, not just physical pressure, but mental pressure, you know, got to make a play here, down by 11 with 5 minutes left, and you know, things like that. So I think you're on the money with that, Sage. The quantifiability of it all, the numbers, they're probably sitting somewhere, but we'll try to find some of those. It's an interesting point.
Steve, the one game that was an outlier in that respect, I think, was the Atlanta game in Tampa, where I think the Bucs had a 21-0 lead and then somehow let the Falcons creep back in. That one's on the defense, Lee. You remember that game?
Oh, yeah.
On the defense? On the defense, Ira? You get up that much and you can't put them away and it's on the defense?
Well, you can still look at it that way, Steve, but you should not give up a 21-point lead. I mean,
especially to Atlanta and Mariota.
Yeah, to Mariota, Steve. Now, come on.
All right, Ira, we're going to have to argue about that all night long, not now, because the Bucs won that game 21-15. I'm not hanging that one on the defense. You know, I wanted to bring up one thing before we touch on a couple of important points about the quarterbacks, Ira. This was good for fans or media or anybody who's paying attention. Bill Polian was on SiriusXM NFL Radio talking about why teams go so vanilla in the preseason. He explained that it's really not just about the TV cameras and other teams seeing your plays and scouting and film and all that. He said it's very much about, and a lot of fans wonder, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? Why are they trying this? He said a lot of times they go so vanilla most of the time because the vanilla means basic football, and they got to see which of the young players can actually play basic football. They don't want to scheme a receiver open with a pick route. They want to see if that guy can run his freaking route sharp and beat the guy in front of him and catch a contested catch. They want to see a cornerback on an island. They don't want to, you know, make it easier for him with an exotic blitz, and they don't want to make it easier on the defensive tackle with, you know, stunts and things like that. So he said it's about just looking at the players do what they do. And he also said one other thing about rookies, especially linemen on both sides of the ball. He told the story of how when he used to be a coach, of course, and when he became a scout for the Kansas City Chiefs, he was in charge of scouting other teams, and he wrote up a report on the rookie at that point, but a guy who became future Hall of Famer, Anthony Munoz, at tackle, and he had scouted his first two preseason games and basically wrote up a crappy scouting report, and his boss said, "You realize where Munoz was drafted, right?" And he said, "Oh yeah, of course." And he said, "He's a rookie," and tore it up and said, "You know, you gotta give all these rookies in the trenches a break. There's so much to figure out in a hurry, and you know, get back to me in week 8." And so something to pay attention for the people who are freaking out about what they saw from Cody Mauch in that first game and other linemen.
It's amazing that Polian could try to pull off a gaffe like that. Lee, because the guy ends up with a bust in Canton. Some of his drafts in Indianapolis, Lee, like 6-7 years in a row, and not all first round picks. I mean, he just hit pick year after year. He's getting 2 or 3 starters out of the draft. I mean, he had an incredible run with the Colts, and of course he also did some very good work with Buffalo and Carolina, but that was early Bill Polian. Maybe he learned a lesson back then.
Talking about a run, Ira, I wrote this week. There was a 5-year period where Light's 3rd and 4th round picks, his 5-year period, all his 3rd and 4th round picks, you know, some years he didn't have a 3rd round pick, some years he didn't have a 4th round pick, but all the picks he made in the 5-year period, I want to say 2015 to 2019, the worst one was a special teams ace that got a Super Bowl ring with the Bucs, Ryan Smith. That was worst one. Every player, you know, let's say if you, and I can understand why people do say it, oh, Ryan Smith sucked. Okay, you take Ryan Smith out of the equation, Light batted .888.
Now, he didn't always hit his first couple of picks, Lee. Not always.
3rd and 4th round pick. I'm not talking about 2nd round, not talking about 1st round, not talking about 6th or 7th, just talking about 3rd and 4th round. A 5-year period, the worst one was Ryan Smith, and he was a special teams ace who won a Super Bowl ring with the Bucs.
And just as an asterisk to that, for those saying, oh, he gave away a 3rd-round pick to draft Roberto Aguayo, that was a bust. Well, the year before, 2015, he gave away a 3rd-round pick to draft Ali Marpet. So we're calling that a wash.
There you go, Steve. There you go.
Hey, Sage, the quarterbacks. Now, you reported Baker Mayfield's the starter. We believe you. We know that you got that from a strong source who looked you in the face and was credible and all that. And we noted in the last podcast that none of the big national guys have came out and did the Bucs a favor or did their research and say, it's not true. It didn't even show up in Peter King's column as, oh, you know, my colleague, Ira Kaufman, you know, nothing. So, you know, I think that says an awful lot, and I thought it did, and I think it still does. But here we have the quarterbacks, and you got a lot of fans who believe that, you know, this competition and counting interceptions in practice. Now, I was at with the Bucs, staying at the team hotel the last couple of nights, and I got a chance to talk to 2 assistant coaches, as well as a couple other people, and a point that was made to me, Ira, which I thought was really, really, really telling, and you can look at it from a Trask point of view or Mayfield, however you want to look at it, but these guys told me that, hey, a quarterback competition is not what it was years ago, where you actually got to put the guys on the field in multiple practices that were real, with tackling to the ground and real football and guys hitting each other and scoring their play. He's like, it's just not the case. It's not even close. So much of the quarterback evaluation versus the way it might have been years ago relies on what's going on in meeting rooms, what decisions are being made on the field as it relates to reads versus is he making the right play within the offense versus the execution. A lot of it comes back to leadership that the coaches are looking for. It doesn't matter if the fans like leadership or not. It's what are the coaches looking for? And all these things that aren't about what's happening on the actual field, because it's not real like it used to be, and it's not nearly as much of a sample size. So that gets lost a lot. And that was explained to me, and I think that's something that's going on here now, and a reason why that the coaches, as you reported, Ira, and the organization see Mayfield as, you know, 90 yards ahead of Trask in a 100-meter dash. And I don't think anything changed on that front in the Jets practices. Nobody threw an interception, although Trask fired one right into the chest of a Jets defender, and the guy couldn't squeeze it, and he fumbled it a little bit, and Mike Evans grabbed it out of the air. So he had one of those, and he had a very similar one that went incomplete. Mayfield didn't have any plays like that, and at least this was real football in the sense of, you know, you could hear the hard popping, and there was some hitting going on, though they weren't hitting quarterbacks. But, you know, it's a moot point at this point, especially after the first preseason game, which I was told coaches value extremely highly, more than ever before, because of how practice is.
It's a very interesting observation, Steve, by some of the Buck assistant coaches who will remain nameless in their conversation with you. Lee, my interpretation of that, which I don't disagree with the restrictions, are getting more severe every year about what you can and can't do during training camp. Lee, the effect of it to me is that the underdog, and there's always an underdog in these quarterback competitions. Nobody starts exactly even. One guy might have an edge in experience. There might be investiture where a guy's a first-round draft pick. Lee, the underdog in a head-to-head so-called competition, I think it's very difficult for the underdog to usurp the front runner going into this duel, because some of these restrictions put more of a premium on experience, leadership, mental makeup, what you're doing in the in the discussion room, and not so much about what you're doing on the field. I think it hurts the guy that's kind of trying to catch the other guy. It's very hard. We're going to see that play out here in Tampa. I think we're going to get Bowles on a Zoom call on Sunday morning back in Tampa after flying after the Jets game back home. And I think we're going to see Bowles make the announcement on Sunday. That's what I think is going to happen.
I have a question for you, Ira, about the practices and not tackling guys to the ground. And I've seen quite a few Bucks practices where it was touch football. Quite literally, it was touch football. You touched the guy in the hips, he was down. Is that mandated by the CBA, or is that a team thing?
I think there is some wiggle room from team to team. There is. But I'll tell you, based on the first game, Lee, and what we've seen last year, maybe even 2 years, getting better in the tackling game, the technique, your angles, it's got to be a big, big point of emphasis for Bowles. And I can tell you from inside knowledge of what's going on within the organization, it's driving Bowles up a wall. It's absolutely driving Bowles up a wall, because as a safety, he had to offer run support as a player with Washington, and he was pretty darn good at it. Bowles was known as a sure tackler. And I'll say it again, besides Antoine Winfield and Lavonne David, I don't see tackling being a strength of this team at all, Lee. I think it's a big concern.
To emphasize or to reinforce what you said about Winfield, last year he had one missed tackle. Winfield.
Wow.
Uno.
Wow.
Which is incredible. Even he was shocked when I told him that.
Lee, that's an observation that's worth accentuating. You know, Steve, we see other teams' backs do it against the Buck defense, but we're really not seeing it in Tampa, where the backs are making the first guy miss. We're not really seeing that.
Yeah, just to definitively answer the question, Lee, it's come up before. Teams absolutely can tackle to the ground in their own practices. They can have full-out scrimmages, bring in refs, do whatever the hell they want on those days in pads. That's it, period. This was a huge issue during the pandemic, when there was no joint practices and no preseason games. It was a big deal. And Arians himself talked about, maybe we'll have a couple of days where we actually do full-on scrimmaging a certain amount of minutes. And they did.
And yet the Bucs somehow won a Super Bowl with a brand-new quarterback. Don't know how they did it without preseason games, but there we are.
So yeah, it's not even a question. They're totally allowed to do it. It's something that's phased out. Everybody's afraid of an injury. And look at preseason, you have injuries all over the place. Dolphins just had their left tackle carted off. The prognosis is better than it was supposed to be, but you know, there were other injuries in preseason last night. So it's just how it goes. Sage, I have a feeling, Ira, if I had to predict on your prediction, I don't think Todd Bowles is going to announce that on his Zoom call, press conference on Sunday morning. I think he's going to not say a word about the quarterback. Then he'll meet with the players. He'll tell them, and then Adam Schefter will have it. That's how I think it's going to go.
Ah, Steve, you always go right to the source and get it right. By the way, one more thing, guys. One more thing about the tackling. If Zion McCollum, and I'll say this right now, and I don't think I'm going to be challenged on this. If Zion McCollum was a decent tackler, not elite, but decent, he'd have that nickel job right now. And he doesn't. Ooh. He's not a factor in the nickel, but I think they really wanted him to win that job, Steve, I think, going back into OTAs and training camp. And it's not going to happen because whoever wins that job has got to be a short tackler, a good tackler. But Zion McCollum's not there, Steve, and that's the reason he's going to be a backup corner. And not the nickel.
I think he's very weak at tackling, but I think this Isaiah, you know, Shannon Man from Rutgers, I just think he's that much better of a cover guy. He's that good. I mean, he's a ball hawk. He's always around the ball. McCollum, he's basically Ryan Smith the second so far. He's very good at special teams, but man, he needs work. A good athlete like that, and he still hasn't turned the corner as a cornerback. But this is Zion, he impresses me, especially for a guy that's an undrafted free agent. He's really impressed me, and that's why I think he's starting, because he's just a better ball player on defense. And yes, he's a better tackler too.
Yeah, Sage, one of these days the teams will get smart and go up to an undrafted free agent that they don't necessarily like that much, or maybe that they like a little bit. They'll go up to an undrafted free agent running back and say, look, we'll overpay you. We told you know, the other teams are offering you a $22,000 signing bonus. We'll give you $75,000, but one thing that's going to happen to you in training camp is when we go to live tackling periods, you're the guy who gets the ball, because we're going to hit you about 30 times in training camp full force. So our guys learn how to tackle. Are you up for that? And I don't know why they don't designate certain players to get tackled. You know what? There's a couple of backup tight ends that would have no problem going over the middle to try to prove they have what it takes and catch a slant and let them get popped by KJ Britt right in the gut. I don't understand why they don't do that. They have bodies that they're going to cut anyway. Why don't you just have training camp guys who are designated camp meat, as they say, to get pounded? I don't get it.
You're looking for a tackling dummy over there, Steve, in live action. Hey, by the way, if this kid out of Rutgers, who might be the second biggest story out of training camp behind Trey Palmer, if he does a more than serviceable job as slot corner, this has the looks of a darn good secondary, Steve. Now, it's a big if. That kid hasn't played it down in the NFL, but I like the starting safeties. I like the starting corners. McCollum is your third corner. He's got a little bit of experience. Steve, the secondary, it could be a strength if that happens.
You got to see him play. So hope so. You know, I mean, undrafted free agent nickel, you got to hope for the best. And, you know, he has the speed, right? So you know that he should, and the quickness, he should be able to cover if he has, you know, he has enough physical talent, which is usually where the undrafted free agents are lacking. So that's what makes him a little bit unique. Usually it's, you know, not enough speed that holds those guys back or whatever it is. They're just the D Delaney's of the world who just don't have the athleticism. The guy from Rutgers isn't, seems to have that. Sage, Ryan Jensen, not to reset whether he plays or doesn't play and all the stuff we've talked about before, but just moving forward from the new place we're at, I was able to break the story yesterday that Jensen did not travel with the team and he's not going to be at the game. So that means 4.5 days he decided to disconnect from the Bucs. The official line from the Bucs, which I put in the story, was, well, we knew that he wasn't going to practice or play, so there wasn't much benefit to him coming along. That's just got a whole lot of red flags all over it for me, because Jensen has been there consistently, even when he was injured. And last year and early in training camp and stuff this year, He's been there. They're learning a new offense. And, you know, camaraderie is, Todd Bowles will tell you how important it is on these summer trips. And Jensen doesn't seem like the guy to raise his hand and say, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll stay home. Screw that. So that's where we are. And I think it's a big, huge step forward in the case that something is seriously wrong with Jensen, or maybe he's just, they know internally that they're going to wait another 2 months and try to get him going, you know, by week 8 or something like that.
Well, yeah, I would look at it as a red flag unless Jensen was getting some kind of a special treatment back home in Tampa.
Which could be,
but I didn't hear that he was. And so absence of that, I think Steve's point makes sense in terms of camaraderie, be a part of the team, unless you're getting certain treatment back in Tampa that you wouldn't get in Jersey. I'd be curious about that.
The only other thing I could think of is maybe his knee is barking that much that traveling's not good.
He's a big part of this offense, Steve, a big part of it. You know, that first year in Tampa, I got to admit, I was underwhelmed by Ryan Jensen, especially since they made him the highest paid center in the league, which they did at that time. But he got better. He got better, and he got more important. And especially once Brady came to town, Lee, I thought he kind of reached the levels maybe of a top 10 center in this league, which he wasn't when he first came to Tampa. He really is a tone setter, Lee. They're really going to miss him if they have to miss him. It's a big loss.
Yeah, I just, there's a little bit in the back of my head thinking that maybe we've seen the last of Jensen. I sure hope that's dead wrong, but I'm just spooked by this. About Jensen and when he first came to Tampa, when you said, well, maybe he's a top 10 center. Sure he was. He was in a Pro Bowl a couple years ago. That's top 10. That's top 6. Now, with the first year he came here, he admitted a year or two later, he admitted that he kind of slacked off. You know, he got paid, big paycheck. You know, hey, I got it made. You know, I got a big contract. I'm set for life. He admitted he kind of slacked off a little bit, and he realized that toward the end of the year. And then that offseason, he rededicated himself to being, you know, a top-notch center, worthy of his salary, and, you know, the rest is history, so to speak.
Yeah, we all know the story, but that's where it sits now, and it looks like Robert Haynes is going to win that job because of his experience. I don't think Nick Leverett, we talk about the quarterback competition, I don't think Nick Leverett's going to do enough to separate himself, but you never know. And, you know, they're going to keep relying on what they got there. Cody Mauch, I was told, and I asked because he looked so good in that practice against the Jets. Two pancake blocks and another one were just, you know, was kind of the stuff that you expected from him, or rather the stuff that you saw from him on his college film. And, you know, I was told it was definitely you saw a breakthrough practice from him and looking special. I asked Todd Bowles about that, though he wouldn't admit it. Yeah, well, no, he didn't want to talk about any individual players. Very tight-lipped Todd Bowles. I think, Sage, there's going to be a huge weight off Bowles' shoulders once he makes that announcement that Baker Mayfield's his guy, and then Mayfield does his own news conference about winning the job, and he's going to rally the team, and we're just hours from all that.
Lee, do you think one of the important factors, besides experience, in Mayfield's side of the ledger, Lee, is the fact that Canales is here as opposed to Brady was going to always be in the pocket, and Canales has shown an inclination, as he did with Geno Smith, to get these guys on the move, and you think that works in Mayfield's favor?
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt, and yes, that offense... You know, I like to say, where they refer to Bruce Arians' offense as vertical. Well, Canales is horizontal. It's east to west. It isn't north to south. So, yeah, I'm sure that's a factor. But it's not like Trask is immobile. I've never been a Trask fan after the Bucs drafted him because he didn't show me that I should be a fan. You know, everybody, oh, you hate? No, I don't hate anybody. I hate non-production. If a guy's good, he's good. If he's not, he's not. And, you know, I'm the one out there watching freaking practices. I mean, all the people are screaming at me. How many practices have they seen of Kyle Trask? One, maybe? I was not a fan of Trask only because he did not give me a reason to be a fan. And the first thing I saw, the first glimmer, like, that's interesting, is out of the corner of my eye. It was OTAs this year, this spring, OTAs. I saw someone out of the corner of my eye doing a footwork drill. I'm like, holy smokes, this guy's got good feet. And I look up, it's Trask, and I almost did a double dip. Kyle Trask with feet like that. Fast forward to 6 weeks later, he looked like a completely and totally different quarterback. And whatever Canales did with the guy, it was impressive. So, you know, I can't say Trask is Tom Brady as far as lack of mobility. But, of course, the fact that Canales, his offense is sideline to sideline, not end zone to end zone, that certainly helps Mayfield.
Two things on the quarterback stage, and we'll get out of here. And I think they're both important points for sure that need your sage wisdom. BillCurryFord.com. Shop there today. Now, BillCurryFord.com. Get there this weekend, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. All the pre-construction, pre-Labor Day specials, they're there for you to check out. BillCurryFord.com. Drink your Big Storm beer this weekend. Bromosa, the Tangerine IPA, is their top seller. It's in so many stores. And, of course, find the tap rooms and all the beers at BigStormBrewery.com. Remember, the Sage himself will watch the Bucks opener the opening day. Nothing more exciting than that. With you at Big Storm Clearwater, 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road. And come on out, 1 o'clock kickoff. Come early. We're going to have a good time. And, of course, FloridasElitereStoration.com. Don't be unprepared. That's the message. Florida's Elite Restoration is there for you 24/7. Get to their website, FloridasElitereStoration.com, and learn about all their services for homeowners and business owners and why you need them in your disaster plan. So, Sage, I'm going to ask you the fun question first, and then I got to make the point that was shared at Jets practice. Question for you, Ira. Philosophical, Jason Light, helicopter question. Kyle Trask, let's say he plays pretty well on Saturday night. No reason to think he won't. And Baker Mayfield wins the job. And there you have Kyle Trask, third-year player, cheap contract, clearly is improved, just put something decent on film, shown that he can learn different, or he's been in different offenses, had been around some quality guys. If he doesn't win the job, you're pretty much labeling him a backup quarterback. And at that point, given how good, in my opinion, the third-string quarterback has looked for the Bucs, John Wolford, do you try to trade Kyle Trask? And if you can get, if there's some injuries around the league and somebody's willing to throw you a sixth-round pick in late August for Kyle Trask to come in and be their backup, do you do it?
Unquestionably, no. I don't do it. I love him as a number two for some subtle reasons. One, if there's an injury to Mayfield or through six or seven games, things are not going well with Mayfield, I want to be able to put Trask in live conditions and look at him for the rest of the season over eight games, nine games, absolutely know what I have and don't have in Kyle Trask going forward. And if things fall apart, I'm getting Drake May. And if Trask shows something, maybe I can work with him. One way or the other, I'm not dealing Trask because if things go off the rails, I'll have a chance to fully evaluate him as an NFL quarterback. But right now, I'm going with Mayfield. This guy from the Rams, he's a total backup. I'm not dealing Trask at this point, Lee. I like him at that number two spot, and I think it's a good situation if Mayfield is the starter and Trask is his backup. I'm not dumping him.
There is a line of thinking, Ira, that if Todd Bowles can't decide between Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask, that means that the front office better be scouting quarterbacks, as in the college.
Guys, we're focused on the 23 Bucks, as we should be. We're on the brink of a new season. Let's see what happens. Relatively weak division. I know Vegas thinks they're going to win six or seven games, but we'll see. But, Steve, we can't lose sight, and I just sent you a column this morning, and I did it again, because it's the overwhelming issue. Lee, you cannot get around it. And Jason Light has to be thinking about it. I'm sorry. You must be thinking about it all the time. You got to get one of these guys. And let's be honest, Lee, what are the chances that Mayfield or Trask is one of these guys? And by one of these guys, Lee, I don't mean Kirk Cousins. I mean I mean Joe Burrow. I mean Josh Allen. Of course, I mean Mahomes. It looks like I mean Jalen Hurts. It looks like I mean Herbert. They never have one. They had Brady, but Brady was 43. They never hit the big time with the right guy where you are relevant for 5 or 10 years. It has never happened. That is the overwhelming issue to me with this franchise, and that's why they can't sustain success. They can't.
All right. And they haven't. Ira, I got some questions for you here.
You got nothing.
I got questions for you, Ira. I got questions. So let me ask you a hypothetical here. Did the Buccaneers flat out screw up in 2018 when they traded down out of Josh Allen's pick that went to the Bills and draft Vita Vea and those other guys? Did they screw up because he was sitting right there for them and they knew that while Jameis, was 3 years in, it wasn't looking like he was going to be a superstar. Did they screw that up?
They misevaluated Josh Allen, as some other teams did. They misevaluated him. If they thought he was a franchise quarterback, they should have taken him, Lee, at that point.
That's true, but it wasn't like Jameis was Mike Glennon. Let's not get carried away.
No, he wasn't Mike Glennon, but they weren't winning with him for various reasons. But
well, the main reason was that garbage defense. I mean, absolute garbage defense. Oh, my God, Mike Smith. I brought up Mike Smith to someone with the Bucks the other day. I thought they were going to keel over and throw up. I think it was the funniest reaction.
Steve, you can't argue with my main point, though, Steve.
No, I can't argue with your main point, but I can question you on this Trask thing because you're saying that they need this guy and that Trask or Mayfield is probably not the guy, and we all know it. Okay, if we accept your premise, Ira, then I asked you a question that if they claim that Mayfield is the better of these two guys who isn't the guy, then and someone's willing to give you, let's say a team has an injury, is willing to give you a late fifth-round pick for Kyle Trask, why wouldn't you just get rid of him? Because if Mayfield falters, and then you know that you're going in for the going in on a drafting a quarterback, that's capital that you could use to help, sweeten up a trade a little bit.
Well, I'll say this, Lee, because I don't know that Trask is a bum. I don't know that. He might be a bum. He might be a career backup, but I don't know it. Right now, Mayfield gives him a better chance to succeed this season. Lee, you never know. Mayfield could turn his whole career around. He could be the guy. You don't know that he's not. Unlikely. And we don't know that Trask is a bum. If he's a bum and I can get a sixth-round pick, I'm doing it. But we don't know that.
I
think this is the right situation. I think it's the right situation. Steve, it's just remarkable to me. Absolutely remarkable. They have never hit on a first-round quarterback. Doug Williams is the exception because Doug Williams was fairly successful, and that was a contract situation, whereas Testaverde, Dilfer, they didn't get the job done. Josh Freeman.
Oddly enough, when Testaverde got decent coaches, he wasn't so bad. Parcells,
right,
and Belichick, absolutely, he wasn't that bad.
Absolutely right. And Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Say what you will, but he did.
And Steve Young, same way. He went to San Francisco. He got good coaching. Boom, Hall of Fame.
What a history.
Our good friend Sean Sullivan, he's already convinced that there's going to be 5 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, and
very good news for Buck fans. Very good news.
And he's already studied what teams will draft a quarterback in the first round. He believes the Bucks are in prime position to get a good first round quarterback next year.
Well, that might mean that he thinks they're going 5-12.
Well, not necessarily. He says he's looking at what teams would draft a first round quarterback, and there aren't many.
Maybe you're right.
He thinks there's a glut. There's not, the market's going to be low for a quarterback. So the Bucs could be 500. They could be 9-8. And it's a chance that they could still land a quarterback. That's his view.
You know what team's very interesting, Steve? And they stink. This team stinks. They might be the worst team in football. And that's the Cardinals. I think if they get a chance at the first or second pick, Lee, I think they're going to take a quarterback. I do.
Wow.
They'll give up on Murray just like that.
That's 2 first-round picks in a row they gave up on before the contracts ran out. Wow.
I don't think they'll stick with Murray, Steve, if they got a chance to draft another guy.
Well, why would you? If it is all about the quarterback, then you got to go with who you think's the best available. It's as simple as that. Look, Josh Allen was the third quarterback off the board when he went off the board, and we have the first one off the board. So maybe this is our year, Ira. We got the number one overall pick, even though it's 2018. Last question for you, Sage. Do you think Mike Evans slipped up a little bit? Do you think he wishes he had it back? I wrote this up on Wednesday. He said after practice, we want to know who the starter is going to be, you know, soon, end quote, so we can just keep working and he can take control of the offense.
I think Mike Evans spoke for 9 other starters on the Buck offense. It makes sense. He let his guard down. But God bless him. That's Mike Evans. That's why we love him, Lee. Besides the fact he's a hell of a player, he speaks his mind. And I think he was speaking for Godwin, too. The offensive line, the tight end room, Rashad White. Let's get this quarterback named and move on from there. And I don't think we got very much longer to wait for it.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are about to hit the field on Saturday night. Sage, it should be fun. Of course, we'll talk to you right after that. Any good food on the weekend docket for you, Ira?
I think we're going to go out tomorrow night. I'm always looking for a new place. You know, Lee, when we go out, the one thing besides the food being good, I like to have a reservation. I'm not showing up to a place, Lee, and I don't care where the hell it is, and the person saying it's a 45-minute wait. I'm not doing it, Lee. There's too many places. And go have a drink at the bar. Well, that turns into two drinks at the bar. That affects your appetite. Now you just drop $45 before you even started. I like a reservation, Steve. I might come down to your neck of the woods, Stevie. I might come down to Pinellas and see what's going on over there. Always interested in a new place. But we went last week to Sacred Pepper for my birthday. They do a great job over there. Northdale Mabry at the Bartolo's place. Great food, great service. They got entertainment. Highly recommended. Highly recommended, Steve.
Well, they got jugglers wandering around the people in the table.
Oh, they got a guy running around with a Mike Evans jersey taking your drink orders. It's fabulous.
All right, well, now I'm starting to understand, Ira, why you and your wife go out to dinner and four drinks cost you $45. You're going to these fancy places. Now I'm starting to get a picture here. Okay. All right, Sage. Eat well, and we'll see you Saturday night.